Hey, welcome to Your Turn, Mike Causey. Delighted to have you with us, as we are every Wednesday at 10 a.m. And we're going to be, as usual, following the money, in this case, your money today. Talk about retirement, pay freezes, and the all-important federal long-term care insurance program, which is celebrating its 10th year. Very important stuff, and we have a lot to say about that. First, we're going to go to Steve Losey with the Federal Times. Steve is a senior writer and a frequent commentator here. Steve, you with us?
I'm here. How are you?
Hey, listen, we live in interesting times, as the proverb says.
No, we do, definitely. We do indeed. Right now, I think the most interesting thing going on that your listeners are going to be interested in is the move to increase pension contributions by 5%. Now, this was first floated a couple weeks ago, and there's been some movement this week. The House Budget Committee that Paul Ryan chairs, it passed a budget bill that would increase pension contributions by 5%. This is part of his bill to replace much of the sequestration cuts, steep cuts to defense and other programs. And he wants to do that in part by making federal employees pay more for their FERS and CSRS pensions.
Well, from what I read in Federal Times and on our own homepage, it seems that the Republicans want to protect defense and Homeland Security in particular, and this is a way to do it. Given the contention between the House and the Senate, the Republican-dominated House and the Democratic-controlled Senate, not much is getting done. And when the House does manage to get something sent over to the Senate, Harry Reid declares it dead on arrival. But in the case of, as the point you were making, in the case of this one, the Republican proposal to increase it 5% over a period of years, something's probably going to happen, correct?
Well, I think this specific bill is it's likely to come up for a vote in the House tomorrow. It's probably most likely going to pass because it's very Republican controlled. And then what's going to happen, as you said, it's going to go to the Senate and it's just going to die there. Now, that's not necessarily going to be the end of this 5% proposal, even if it doesn't get passed here. I would not be surprised if Republicans bring this idea up at some time in the future, attach it to a bill that Democrats can't refuse. We've seen this happen before a couple of months ago with the extension of the payroll tax cut. Republicans got Democrats to agree to pay for that in part by a increase to future federal employees' retirement contributions.
Well, another thing, and correct me if I'm wrong, is it seems that when the Republicans propose something, the Democrats, at least in this Congress, have automatically opposed it, particularly when it deals with federal employee matters. But in this case, the Obama administration is committed, isn't it, to some kind of increase in the employee retirement contribution?
That's right. The White House has proposed a 1.2 percentage point increase phased in over 3 years, which has essentially become the floor for negotiations because, you know, if the White House has signaled their support for that, the Republicans aren't going to go for anything less. So, yeah, it's looking like what may happen is an increase of anywhere from 1.2% to 5% now.
The National Active and Retired Employees sent me something today, and it's literally a scorecard of keeping track with legislation. And you need that, don't you, these confusing times?
Yeah, there's so many bills coming out. It's coming fast and furious. And, yeah, sometimes you do need a scorecard to keep all the different proposals straight. You know, this one proposal, there are certain elements that have changed. You know, it would also eliminate the first Social Security supplement for new employees hired beginning in 2013. You know, a couple of months ago, that was anyone retiring after 2013. So, yeah, it changes an awful lot. But right now, the proposal is anyone who is hired beginning next year under this Ryan bill would lose their first Social Security supplement.
Well, that would really take some of the starch out of the fight against it, wouldn't it? Because it's prospective as opposed to hitting everybody.
That's right. It's one of the few Republican proposals that have been somewhat softened over the last couple of months.
Well, the one that I keep getting the most comment from people and the questions about is I guess it's something that really doesn't exist except out there in the ether, and that is this one to change the high three retirement computation to high five. Is that anywhere on paper or in print?
It's not in any specific bill right now. that I know of. It's something that keeps getting floated. It's something that keeps getting suggested by various groups, various lawmakers raise that specter. But we haven't seen any serious effort to pass a high five yet. Now, I'm hearing the same thing you are. There are an awful lot of feds out there who are scared to death of a high five. Last week, as we were gearing up for Public Service Recognition Week, I was talking to a lot of feds who were saying that they were planning to try to get out this year before 2013 hits because they're convinced that one way or another that high five is coming. And I would not be surprised if it does. I'm just saying we haven't seen it so far.
It's not. If it's there, it's definitely over the horizon, isn't it?
Yeah.
It intrigues me, and you know we all think differently, but how some people say, if this happens or if the higher contribution happens, even if it's phased in, that they will immediately retire. And yet there are equally smart people with the same calculators who say, I'm going to work forever. They're going to have to literally carry me out of here. And it's kind of almost an act of defiance.
Yeah, but you know what? We've been hearing the people that you're describing saying, you're going to have to carry me out of here. There's a lot fewer of those these days. We crunched the numbers a couple of months ago, and we found that retirements in 2011 were up 11%. 24%. And this year, so far this year, they were up, I believe, about 11% or so. The retirements are up, and people, there's talk now from people in the federal HR community that we could be seeing this long-awaited, long-speculated-upon retirement tsunami.
Well, I was going to mention that. Mike O'Connell, one of our staff writers and editors, did a piece earlier, and there was speculation that with the numbers you've quoted, the 24% and the 11%, that maybe the tsunami had started. And then I did one today, which was half tongue-in-cheek and half serious, that the numbers are down in April. So, you know, it's a bird, it's a plane. It's a bird. You know, we're back to that. And I guess this will be happening every month. People will look at the numbers and make their predictions accordingly.
Yeah, that's right.
But what's the impact of the retirement tsunami? And it will hit, and it's going to hit in big numbers. Is this going to open up? Is this a good thing? Will it open up promotions for people, or will it be used to downsize the government without rifts?
It's kind of a mixed thing. I mean, there's certainly that potential for opening up some positions for feds to younger feds to move up, but on the other hand, budgets are tight. They're just getting tighter. We got sequestration on the way, and whether, you know, maybe that'll get enacted or maybe the Congress will avoid it. But one way or another, steep budget cuts are coming. And there's going to be a lot of positions that are vacated when people retire, and they're just going to stay vacant because agencies can't afford them. We're already seeing lots of agencies do buyouts. The Air Force, for example, just last week started their third round of buyouts, believe it or not. And I was at the Excellence in Government conference earlier this week, and there was there was talk of RIFs, and not speculating about which agencies were going to be offering RIFs, but some people were saying maybe it's unavoidable, maybe it's not so bad, maybe RIFs are a better way for managing the workforce than buyouts and early outs, because you can target them, you can get rid of the people who aren't really contributing to the mission or whose jobs may be outdated or no longer necessary. So it's possible that that could be the next shoe to drop.
Yeah, I know people like me have been saying they're not going to have another round of buyouts until October 1, so the Air Force proved that wrong. They're having them when they think they're needing them.
Yeah.
Well, Steve, listen, thank you so much for joining us and giving us the rundown. We'll talk to you next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Thank you, Steve Losey, back here on Federal News Radio.
To win and deliver government health care contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Moreover, with over 900 health care IT initiatives proposed in the 2013 federal budget, you need to begin building your health care IT teams now. Meet Tech Systems. Every year, Tech Systems deploys thousands of IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems Government Services offers a dedicated healthcare division to deliver practical healthcare IT solutions to the federal, state, and local government. No matter where you are on your meaningful use journey, Tech Systems can guide you through the transition. From providing managed services that tailor end-user training by role and workflow, to providing BI solutions that get you closer to your quality care goals. Tech Systems, our people make IT possible. Learn more at TechSystems.com. TekSystems.com.
The year was 1941. America was about to go to war. Rosie the Riveter had not yet become an icon. But one October morning, Marie Kalk and 18 other women walked into the new Glenn L. Martin airplane plant in Omaha looking for jobs. At about the same time, Bernice Olsen went to work at the Lockheed factory in Burbank. None of them thought they were going to make history, but they did. Along with nearly a half million other women who joined the war effort. Because they were doing more than building workhorse aircraft like the B-26 bomber and the B-38 Lightning. By answering their nation's call, Marie, Bernice, and the others blazed a trail that their daughters and granddaughters would one day follow, all the way to the top. Their story is our story. See it and others unfold at LockheedMartin.com/100 years.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPInc.com. That's NITPInc.com for more information.
This is John Gilroy from Federal Tech Talk. You know, I've done over 260 interviews here on Federal News Radio, but many listeners still ask, what does your company do, John? My company is called Armature. For the past decade, we have worked with organizations that have programs for conformity assessment, accreditation, standards, and policy management. Is your agency responsible for conformity assessment? If so, then please visit our website, armaturecorp.com. We can help.
Adobe Acrobat Pro is actually used very commonly for PDF archiving. If you've got a lot of files of different formats and different types, if you just save these files into all these different formats, then 20 years later somebody wants to look at the file, they'd actually have to have the program that could open up that file. So for digital archiving, you'd rather have a standardized file format.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM. As IT becomes more ingrained in agency missions, the acquisition process will need to become more responsive in meeting the needs of the technology workforce, especially since ongoing trends suggest 2012 will be a watershed year for reform. Join AFSEA Bethesda on May 24th at the Bethesda North Marriott as Chief Acquisition Officers and Senior Procurement Executives discuss how agencies and industry can work together to improve technology acquisition. Register today at AFSEABethesda.org/maybreakfast.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. Glad to have you with us. And we're going to be talking about an incredibly important subject that's the kind of thing people don't want to think about, but it's the sort of thing you should be thinking about. It as part of your estate planning and as part of, I like to think of it as a gift to your, maybe your spouse, a gift to your children, or a gift to your loved ones, and that is long-term care insurance. The federal program is 10 years old this year. And in the studio today, and they were gracious enough to fly down from New Hampshire, Paul Fort, who runs the overall program, and Mary Lou McGinnis, who is on the medical side of it. And well, thank you both for coming. And let me get on my soapbox for 2 minutes. I always do this with long-term care insurance. We're not being sponsored by it or in any particular group. But when I was at the Washington Post a long time ago, I got long-term care insurance probably much earlier than most people think you need it. About 5 years after that, my mother, who was a government worker, retired government worker, got long-term care insurance. Not through your program, but she did get it, at least. She was hit with dementia, Alzheimer's, vibrant woman, very active and athletic and a big-time walker, did not own a car until she was in her mid-30s. So she's a city gal and a walker. But this horrible thing hit her a bad 2 years before she died. But they were made so much better by the fact that she had long-term care insurance, so she had her civil service retirement benefit, some Social Security, and this long-term care insurance, and she had virtually 100% coverage. And as her only child, it saved me from a lot of not only heartache and financial stuff, and my four adult children and their spouses were very helpful in doing this. But it was a gift not only to herself, but more to us. And I think about this, and I'm so glad I got it. Paul, 10 years on, how's it doing?
Well, Mike, it's doing very well. You know, this program, which was created by an act of Congress in 2000, and had its first open season in the early spring of 2002, is now, it's 10 years old. It was designed for the long haul. We're talking 50-plus years. It's just completed the first decade. It's mature. It's stable. We've had significant growth. We have some 270,000 people enrolled. It's global in reach in the sense that people are enrolled who live all over the world. And it provides comprehensive benefits. We think that it's really a national model for how private long-term care insurance can be delivered at a competitive cost to large numbers of people.
Well, it's Mary Lou and I were talking before the show about this is a subject people don't want to talk about, you know, because it means getting old, maybe getting dementia, going into a home away from your home. It's not kind of thing we don't want to contemplate. And people look at this insurance differently. You buy home insurance, you buy fire insurance, you buy auto insurance. You don't hope your house will burn down. You don't hope your car will be destroyed. You don't hope for any of these things. Yet with long-term care insurance, people somehow look at the premiums as this is something I'm gonna miss if I don't use them.
That's correct. I think we always look at this in a different sort of way than we do normally with insurance. And I think that you have to look at it as you do any other type of insurance. You hope like heck you don't have to use it. But as you mentioned, your experience with your mom, that's when people start identifying the fact that when the need exists, then there has to be something there to pay for it. And we talk about it like it maybe is always a nursing home. The reality is long-term care does not usually occur in nursing homes. People want it to occur in their home. And even in their home, though, it costs money. And so you have to have the financial backing in order to be able to pay for these things. Even having someone come into your home ends up being thousands and thousands of dollars a year that you have to be able to come up with to pay for. Well, so long-term care insurance does serve that purpose.
I've thought of it in retroactively is the best Christmas present she ever gave me.
Correct.
And the family. You know,
absolutely.
I think many people don't get what long-term care insurance is. They say, look, I've got Blue Cross, I've got APW, I have great health insurance. The government has its own programs. I have a good retirement, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid will take care of it. Not so, huh?
Not so at all. And I think that's probably one of the biggest and the most expensive misconceptions for people because it allows them to be lulled into a sense of security that, in fact, does not exist. Medicare can cover some certain types of things when skilled services are being required. When you're in the home, that means that a nurse or a therapist has to be required as part of your plan of care for Medicare to take care of it. If you're in a nursing home facility, Medicare will cover completely 20 days. After that first 20 days, there is a very steep copay that people have to pay. Even if Medicare is still paying, that copay comes into effect at that time. So you will often see people going into a nursing home for rehab and coming out at day 21 because that's the point in time when their own resources are going to have to be used. Over $200 a day. It changes every year, but it's over $200 a day now that will come out of their pockets. So it is not something Medicare covers. Medicaid will cover long-term care if there is a financial need. But that means spending down all of your assets, a little bit varying levels from state to state, but $2,500 is about the norm. So you have to have no assets over and above $2,500 with a certain few exceptions, like if your spouse is living in the home or that kind of thing. But overall, you have to be in a very financially destitute situation before Medicaid will come in. And with what's happening now with the state funding and whatnot, Medicaid funding is also very, very iffy as to whether you'll be able to get the care where you want it.
If I could go back to just a point that we were making earlier about need, Medicare is geared, of course, to health care, and especially to acute health care situations. You have an illness, you have a serious condition, it requires a doctor's intervention, you may have to go to the hospital, you may stay there for a few days. There is expected to be some kind of outcome. Therapies are applied, and then presumably you're going to get better and you're going to get discharged. Long-term care doesn't fit that pattern. That's why it really isn't covered by Medicare, why it's not covered by FEHB and other Medigap policies and other kinds of insurance that are geared to medical attention. It's for when you reach a point in your life, like your mother did, Mike, where you are not able to take care of yourself, whether due to some kind of frailty, physical incapacity, or because of a cognitive deficit. You can't take care of yourself. You're going to need personal nursing assistance from another person, and that's why it fills a need in retirement security that is otherwise not being met.
Well, the facility she was in was in Potomac, Maryland, and except for the fact, the reason you're there, I think any of us in this room would move there tomorrow. I mean, a beautiful place, and you had to worry about deer running you over when you went out into the front yard. And she objected because of all the old people. But, you know, which happens to us. But had she gone into a Medicaid facility, it would be very different.
That's correct. Very often the county homes are the ones that accept Medicaid without limitations. However, the nice private homes will at best have a budgeted number of Medicaid beds that they will take, because keep in mind Medicaid pays about half the amount that a private pay insurance or a private pay in general will cover. So facilities that are really nice that you'd like to live in and look at the deer are probably not going to have a lot of Medicaid beds.
Yeah, they have as few as possible.
Choices. Your other reason is having options.
Now, with a long-term care policy, you buy it, you get a daily benefit, and you get it for a certain length of time. Is it 1 year to 3 years, 5 years to life?
Well, it varies on the underwriter. The federal long-term care insurance program will offer you a 2 year, a 3 year, a 5 year, or an unlimited program. By far the most popular choice now is the 3 year. And more specifically, a large number of people are buying the $150 a day policy, the standard 90 day waiting period with a 4% compound increaser. So each year you have the benefit, your principal daily amount and your lifetime pool goes up by 4%. That's by far the most popular offering that we have under the new FELTSIP 2.0 program.
That's what I did not get. I bought a private plan, obviously, over the private sector, and it's good. And I think it's $150 a day, which really seemed like it was adequate in those days. Now it'll just pay a piece of it, but there is no inflation, or it's not inflation adjustment. It's a guaranteed, right?
Right. Well, this is if you buy the what we call the automatic compound increase option. Your benefit will go up either 4% or 5% per year, depending on which you've chosen. And that will keep that benefit fresh. But I think the thing to recognize as well is that many people are being more practical about their insurance purchase. They understand that insurance is there to cover the majority of their expense, the majority of their risk, not necessarily to take care of absolutely every single dollar that they might incur if they have a need many years down the road. And I think that's how we buy all insurance, and that's how we ought to buy insurance.
I want to ask you the what's in it for me question. We need to take a short break here on Federal News Radio. We'll be right back.
Journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
Attention federal employees. Are you a new manager looking to develop your leadership skills or a senior leader preparing to join the senior executive service? If so, the George Washington University Center for Excellence in Public Leadership can help prepare you. With more than 15 years of experience providing professional development to federal government employees, they understand the challenges you face as a public leader. The center's variety of courses, geared to specific GS levels, will help you enhance your abilities and advance your career. And with a full schedule of classes offered year-round, you are sure to find a date and time that is convenient for you. For more information or to register for a course, please visit leadership-programs.org. That's leadership-programs.org or call 202-994-9522. That's 202-994-9522.
This week's Experts in Health topic is Detecting Dementia, featuring Dr. David Lipps, Chief of Neurology with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group in Northern Virginia.
My patients often ask me, how to identify the warning signs of dementia? Dementia is not a specific disease, but rather a group of symptoms that reflect a gradual decline in brain function, including memory and thinking skills that are severe enough to interfere with day-to-day activities. While the symptoms of dementia can vary, the key defining features are significant decline in short-term memory, planning and reasoning skills, difficulties with language and attention. Some warning signs of dementia may include difficulty remembering what was said moments earlier, or asking the same questions repeatedly, problems completing familiar tasks, repeatedly losing one's sense of direction, or losing train of thought in mid-sentence. Speak with your family physician or a neurologist if you identify any of these signs, as treatments now exist to help several causes of dementia.
Dr. Lipps was recognized as a top doctor in Northern Virginia Magazine. To learn more about Kaiser Permanente, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
The American Veterans Center invites you to the 2012 National Memorial Day Parade, presented by Boeing, Monday, May 28th at 2 p.m. along Constitution Avenue. Join veterans groups, musical performers, hundreds of active duty troops and celebrity veterans and supporters of the military, including Gary Sinise, Miss America 2012, and Grand Marshal and Air Force legend General Chuck Yeager. The parade is presented by Boeing, with additional support from the Association of American Railroads and many other generous sponsors. To learn more about how you can see the parade, visit NationalMemorialDayParade.com.
After a nationwide competition, a dozen student teams were recently selected to showcase innovative engineering projects by the National Collegiate Inventors and Innovators Alliance. A Baltimore team hopes to improve punch biopsies, the most common technique for getting skin samples that includes all layers. The procedure involves several tools, a circular blade, a punch tool, forceps, scissors, and Nishant Kumar, a junior at Johns Hopkins University, says,
depending on the expertise of the dermatologist, you could sometimes damage the integrity of the skin sample.
Kumar's team engineered a simple all-in-one punch device. Once inserted into the target skin sample, its innovation is a wire mechanism that acts like a cheese cutter.
It just cuts the skin at the bottom, so it separates the skin from the tissue underneath.
And pulls out a cleanly cut sample. To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
My Mike Causey. Welcome back to Your Turn, talking with Paul Fort and Mary Lou McGinnis from Long-Term Care Partners, and they run the federal long-term care program for Uncle Sam. And as Paul said, it's the 10th anniversary, and they have 270,000 enrollees, and hopefully many more federal workers than that have long-term care insurance through another outfit, because more than 270,000 people should have this, given what it is. Hey, ask you the money question. What's in it for me if I want to join the long-term care program, or why should I? It's not just nursing homes. We established that. No. It's other things, and it's things that are not covered by Medicare or Medicaid.
Just for the record, only about 15% of people who are using the federal long-term care insurance program are receiving care in a nursing facility. The other 85% are receiving it either at home or in some kind of community setting.
That is so important. I mean, when Mary Lou said that, I've totally forgotten that part of it.
Yeah.
But, most people won't stay home.
It's not nursing home insurance. Comprehensive coverage. You can get the kind of care you want and that you need at all levels and in any venue, which would include, of course, nursing home. But home health care agencies, adult daycare facilities, informal care, assisted living. You've got competitive costs. You have excellent service, which is reinforced under contract by the U.S. Office of Personnel Management. You have some unusual consumer protections that are built into the program, like independent third-party review of claims, and Mary Lou can talk about that. And also the Experience Fund, which is like a separate account that is the basis of the financials of the program and ensures that experience gains do not go to the insurer but stay in the program for the benefit of the enrollees. Finally, it's sponsored by the federal government. Now, this is not trivial because you've got the power of large-scale purchasing, and the feds are able to negotiate on your behalf. Because as sponsor and regulator, of course, they are accountable to the Congress. So this program is getting a lot of attention, and it delivers a lot.
Well, what frightens me personally, as I said, I got this maybe 20 years ago, it's with a very reputable company going strong, but they no longer offer long-term care insurance. Mm-hmm. As many have dropped it because it's so expensive. Now, I'm still covered, but I'm afraid they're going to come after me and get a hitman on me just to get rid of this possible liability. Got a question here from a listener, it's funny, it's well-written, and it's interesting. It's from Donna, and she's with Health and Human Services. I have all the questions you listed. When should I get it? This is good. What plan is best? Doesn't it duplicate other benefits? I'm 66 and have been in front of the first program for 20 years. I'm a grade 13 stop 10, top of my grade. So last year and this year, no pay increase at all. I can retire, but I can't afford to retire. I have Social Security before the government for 17 or so years, and I'm unclear what exactly I'll get in retirement from FERS, Social Security, and the Thrift Savings Plan are all together. Now with the savings, so do I need to pay more money for long-term care insurance? My youngest son, 36, says I don't have to worry about being put in a home. He will just put me in the closet, a walk-in. Ha, ha, ha. My oldest son, 46, drives me to the local retirement home occasionally and says, let's just stop for lunch. But his plan is to drop me off and not come back. Just kidding. But, you know, people have these things. What about her situation?
Well, we don't know exactly what her resources are. I mean, she's listed a number of things. We don't know exactly what her after-tax income will
be. At 66, I would say, that given what she's got and her grade level, she's going to be much better off than the average 66-year-old person.
Yes, but even so. If she were to need long-term care and she wanted to get it in the home, and furthermore, under the federal program that she was, she was interested in family informal care benefits, maybe from family members. So we have her receiving care. She's going to pay at least $15 an hour for an informal care provider. If she were to do that 6 hours a day, that's $90 a day. If she does it 5 days a week, that's $450 a week. And again, that's only 30 hours a week now. And on the weekend, she'd have to be family members would have to take care of her themselves. And we're talking about $2,200 a month, $23,000 a year after tax. So even if she has resources, she's got to ask herself whether she wants to be spending out of pocket some $23,000 a year to get about 30 hours of care per week to stay at home. And as Mary Lou was saying, of course, that really adds up. And of course, if she had the federal program, she would easily be able to get those benefits.
And Mike, I would just add that Paul's example is good when somebody needs assistance with the activities of daily living, such as bathing and dressing. But given the situation that your mom was in, she needed 24-hour supervision.
Yes.
So that amount of money would not even cover what
right.
she needed. And actually having someone there 24 hours a day, it's actually more expensive in the home even than a facility. So you're looking at facility care for somebody like that, and then you're looking at somewhere around $60,000 a year. So it really can be very, very expensive.
Assisted living can run you $60,000. In the Washington area, it can be $85,000, $90,000 a year.
Yeah, that's
So I mean, for this lady needs to think about the risk that she's under of either having to take that sum out of her savings or to turn more heavily to her two children and their family members to get the care that she might need.
I had a question about care coordination, but that's what you're talking about here, right?
That's correct.
Maybe a daycare center, an adult daycare center, help at home or in the evenings. And the other thing, very important, can you have a friend or relative take care of you and be paid through this policy?
That's an important factor, and I think that it's one of the strengths of the federal program in that we do allow what we call informal providers to provide the care. That means that somebody is working directly for the insured as opposed to coming in through a home health agency and working for somebody else. So the person in the home actually gets to choose who they're comfortable with and who those providers are that they would most like to have take care of them. Frequently, that is a family member. Many long-term care insurance policies do not allow family members, but the federal program does. The only thing that we look at is if you're living in the home at the time the claim was open. So, for instance, a spouse would not qualify, nor an adult child that was living at home. But other than that, any of your family members can become
somebody
that provider.
Somebody that has to come in.
That's okay. Correct.
This program, what is the typical user, or is there a typical user profile? And I noticed Paul said that the average person, policyholder, they buy it for 3 years. I assume this is the statistical average about how long people, on average, use long-term care. Is
it's actually a little under 3 years.
Uh-huh.
Industry-wide, it's 2.6 or 7
yeah.
years that it takes. So if you have a three-year plan, that generally is very sufficient for you. Right now, our typical claim is on average 73 years of age. And there's 57% of them that are women. This is also very typical in long-term care because the woman takes care of the man for as long as necessary. And then by the time the woman needs care, frequently the man is not available for one reason or another to give her care. So care coming into the home is much more frequent for the woman than it is for the man.
So it has nothing to do with the health of women or anything else. It's just that the guy may not be there when he's needed.
It sort of has to do with the health because their death occurs at an earlier age. And so by the time the older woman requires the care, frequently the man has died, and so therefore there is no one in the home to give that care.
Okay.
I was trying to put it more positively. But
yes, right. Well, this is not a fun subject. But hold that horrible thought. We're going to take a break here. We'll be right back on Federal News Radio.
The Federal Drive is sponsored by Learning Tree International.
Learning Tree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government. They provide high-quality, instructor-led IT and management training to government professionals and contractors at all levels. Call 1-800-THE-TREE or enroll today at learningtree.com/gov. That's learningtree.com/gov.
The Federal Drive, brought to you by Learning Tree International, airs weekday mornings from 6 to 10 and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Join FCEA Bethesda in congratulating the 2012 Government-Wide Initiatives Excellence Awards recipients. Winners include Terry Milholland of IRS Outstanding Civilian Achievement, Vice Admiral Kevin McCoy of Naval Sea System Command Outstanding DOD Achievement, and Larry Albert of Agilex Outstanding Industry Achievement, as well as category winners from GSA, HHS, and other government agencies. If you'd like to get involved with FCEA Bethesda, go to FCEABethesda.org for more information. That's FCEABethesda.org.
To win and deliver government health care contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Moreover, with over 900 health care IT initiatives proposed in the 2013 federal budget, you need to begin building your health care IT teams now. Meet Tech Systems. Every year, Tech Systems deploys thousands of IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems Government Services offers a dedicated healthcare division to deliver practical healthcare IT solutions to the federal, state, and local government. No matter where you are on your meaningful use journey, Tech Systems can guide you through the transition. From providing managed services that tailor end-user training by role and workflow, to providing BI solutions that get you closer to your quality care goals. Tech Systems, our people make IT possible. Learn more at TechSystems.com. TekSystems.com.
Years of practice, dedication in and out of the classroom, stamina, persistence, sacrifice. It all leads to this moment. Champions win here. Don't miss the 2012 NCAA Division I Men's Lacrosse Quarterfinals May 19th. Hosted by the U.S. Naval Academy at Navy Marine Corps Memorial Stadium in Annapolis, Maryland. For information, visit ncaa.com/tickets.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, Thomas Seneca, partner with TM Wealth Management and head of alternative strategies. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax serving the entire D.C. metro area. If you'd like to know more about the firm, visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
As a manager, you need to know how you can make your organization more efficient. Listen for Management Friday on Federal News Radio. We bring you information on the keystone of success for any agency or business. Friday mornings at 10, listen for AFGE's perspective on inside government. Next at 11, Shaw, Bransford, and Roth talk about the legal implications of management decisions on Fed Talk. And at noon, listen for Fed Access with Derek T. Dort to hear what career options may be available. Management Friday, only on Federal News Radio 1500. 900 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Paul Forday and Mary Lou McGinnis from Federal Long-Term Care Partners, 10th year of the federal program. 275,000 people are in it, and that is a very good thing. We've covered what the long-term care insurance does, or a lot of it. And remember, our shows are archived here on Federal News Radio, so you can listen to them at your leisure or tell a friend. And this is really not a fun subject, but it's so important. It's part of estate planning, and many people consider buying long-term care insurance as a gift, maybe the ultimate gift for your kids, your loved ones, your spouse, whoever may be set up to take care of you. And Paul, I think we must have made a mistake here, because we're talking about the typical claim on average today is at age 73. Surely that's not.
No, that's actually correct, and I think it speaks to a number of things about our program. Our primary reason for opening a claim for somebody tends to be because of a diagnosis of cancer. That's followed by cognitive disorders like Alzheimer's disease or other cognitive impairment issues, and neurological diseases such as Parkinson's or ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease. So I think that the fact that those diseases tend to occur at or begin at earlier ages is what leads into that. The other thing I would like to mention is that people often assume that you go into a long-term care situation and that's where you are until you die, and that in fact is not true either. We actually have about a 13% recovery rate where people come in and receive treatment, receive that custodial support that they need for a period of time, and then the situation that led them into claim improves and they actually come out of claim so that they can in fact have that money available for them the next time they need it.
Right. Paul mentioned during the break that if I buy a 3-year policy and use up a year of it, but I don't use it on weekends or somebody comes in, that it's a cumulative total. You get 3 years, period, 365 times three, huh?
Right. You're only charged for the actual expenses that you receive reimbursement on. If you don't use the program because you're being supplemented by family members or friends, then that money stays in your pool until you have use of it down the road. It doesn't just go away. It's not a 3-year calendar thing where it starts today and 3 years from this day, that's it. It expires. It's not like term insurance.
3 actual years. Yeah. Really, we talked about what the typical patient is, but what does a claim look like? And you were talking about care coordination services before, and I think I understand that, but maybe not.
Correct. Interestingly, we get our first call most often from family members, and we'll actually get a rash of calls next week following Mother's Day. This is very common for us after holiday visits home when distant relatives realize that mom and dad actually need a lot more assistance than what they did the last time they saw them. We have a registered nurse who will field that initial call and begin getting that information that they need in order to look at benefit eligibility to see whether, in fact, the person qualifies. There continues to be a lack of understanding on what long-term care actually covers, even among medical professionals. So frequently, if someone needs just light housekeeping or help in transportation to the doctor's office, the doctor will say, well, you should go ahead and use your long-term care insurance policy. It actually is used for very specific criteria, and that is that you need assistance with two of the activities of daily living, or you have a cognitive impairment that is measured. And those are the things that we look at in benefit eligibility. Once the benefit eligibility has been determined and it is deemed that you do, in fact, have these symptoms that we need to look at, we end up having an assessment go into the home to actually look at these activities of daily living. And we'll actually observe a mock shower and dressing situation along with transferring and feeding yourself. And we administer a cognitive screening test so that we actually get good baseline information on how those functions are occurring in the home. We would deny up to about 2.1% program to date of people who come in and are not meeting the benefit eligibility criteria. But the truth is the majority of those people come back later. They maybe just haven't reached that point yet, but they will come back later and they will meet that criteria and they will go into claim. After the benefit eligibility has been determined, the plan of care is developed between the family and the client and the nurse, and we determine exactly what types of care are required to meet the needs that person has. So the plan of care is developed, and then it is reevaluated periodically to make sure that it is continuing to meet the need. I think that Paul mentioned 30% of our people are going into, are receiving their care by way of an informal provider. Another 25% get their care from home care providers like home health agencies. So literally 55% of our people get their care in the home, and then the 15% in nursing homes and another 25% in assisted living facilities. So that's sort of how our care is, our plan of care is developed. One of those sites of care are going to be used, and the amount of care, the intensity we call it, that's required will be reevaluated over time to make sure that we keep up with what the needs are if they're changing in the home.
Well, I'm not trying to shill for you here, but I mean, it looks like there might be situations where when you deny somebody a benefit, you're actually helping them out, because if I really just want a housekeeper for the day,
that's right.
Why use up that $150?
Yes.
Is that right?
And of course, if we were to approve such use, then the cost for everybody, the premium cost, would have to be going up, because we would have many, many more claims, since many people would appreciate having a little extra assistance,
need some yard work,
especially as they get older.
Yeah.
So that's why the criteria are there.
It's important to know that our claim block has changed a lot. I think I was here about 6 years ago, Mike, and we were very few, we had a very few number of claims. But program to date now, we've had over 8,000 claims, and we've actually paid over $250 million out in claims. So the program is working, but part of our educational function is to make sure we help people conserve that money so that it is there and used only when it's needed. It helps protect from premium increases going on, and it also helps protect that pool of money that you have specifically to use in the future as your change needs change.
With the caveat that you can get cancer at any age, you can step in front of a bus at any age, you can have a stroke, but is there kind of a tipping point age when people should have long-term care insurance?
Well, I think that most people begin doing serious retirement planning about the age of 50. Some people who are very conscientious begin that process a lot earlier. And, of course, they're already enrolled in various savings plans. But by the time you're 50, I think you really need to be looking hard at this risk. You're thinking about how many more years you'll work until you get to retirement, what kind of benefits you'll have in retirement, what kind of income you're going to have, whether you're going to purchase annuities to help you along. And I think that that's the time to think about long-term care and the risk of long-term care. You may decide that you want to self-insure it, or you may decide that you're going to buy into a continuing care retirement community or use home equity or some other vehicle, and that's fine if you decide to do it. The important thing is to make sure that you make an informed decision concerning this risk, that you don't ignore it, because as we've been talking about, it does pose a major risk to your retirement security and to your family. So it's too important to put off much beyond that age.
Very good. Thank you, Mary Lou. Thank you, Paul, for being here. We're going to get you back on the 11th anniversary, if not before. Have a good week, everybody. Pass the show on to a friend. We'll see you next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Thanks.
Thank you so much.